do we deal with it? So please put your hands to welcome Arjun Brahmpus.
I know a lot about insecurities. For example, I haven't got a clue what I'm going to say this evening. And also, no one can be more insecure than a monk. I have got no health fund. I have not got any pension fund. I don't even know where I'm going to eat tomorrow. Somebody tells me, that's all. So as a monk, I live life on the edge. I've got no security for my future. I don't even own anything, not even the room where I stay. I'm completely insecure, and I love it. Because when you're insecure in that sense, you're secure in insecurity. In other words, my security system, actually on security systems, we've got this great security system in our monastery to keep thieves out. The first security system we put in was actually when we first moved to our monastery in Australia. It was 100 acres, it was an old farm, and it was just had wire fences around. And in order to keep any thieves out, somebody said we should put a poster on the outside saying trespassers will be prohibited, or trespassers will be prosecuted. But I thought that wouldn't keep anybody out. So I changed the sign, and I wrote the sign, trespassers will be converted. That worked. People were more afraid of being converted than going to jail. But these days, now we've got a wall, a big stone wall around our monastery. If any thieves come into my hut, you know what I've got in my hut? One of the first things people see if they go into my room is a skull. And that scares any burglars away. So instead of investing in expensive security systems, in front of your door, if you can get a skeleton, so anyone walks in, it rattles, and then any thieves will run a mile. So that's my security system. But the real security system which I have, which I encourage for you, is something you've heard about many times before. It's called good karma. And that is always your security system. Because we say we live in insecurity, and what we really mean by that is we're not quite sure what's going to happen in the future with our jobs, with our family, with our health, with our life. But hey, is it really that insecure? Or is it we're not really seeing it properly? The point is, if you make good karma, you know you are very secure. In fact, you know whatever happens to you, there'll always be good things come afterwards because of your good karma. I've been telling this story a few times when I've been here in Singapore, but I don't think I mentioned it here at the Buddhist Lodge. It was an occasion when I was teaching in one of the prisons again, and they had this new security system. Did I say that here in the Buddhist Lodge story? They had a new security system because this prison where I was teaching that had a series of violent offences against the visitors. Because when you think about it, the prisoners who have a very, very long sentence, they've got nothing to lose. You know, if you're in there for 30, 40 years, you know you're going to probably die in the jail. What else can they do to you? Add another 30 years. They're not going to keep your coffin in there for another 30 years. Once you're dead, you're dead. So there were prisoners who had nothing to lose. So they would attack, beat up, even rape people if they weren't careful. And so the prison authorities installed a new security system. They gave me a pen just like this one here. But they said that this is not an ordinary pen. It's just actually a security alarm. They pointed to the ceiling, said that on that ceiling there are sensors, and they pointed one out. If you get in any trouble, point your pen at that sensor, press the button, we'll know that you're in trouble, we'll know exactly where in the prison it is, and we'll come and protect you. Because they had many cases of people being beaten up quite savagely by the prisoners who had nothing to lose. They told me, this is a top secret, don't tell anybody. But of course, as soon as I went into my class of about 40 prisoners, they saw me with that pen and they say, oh, you've got one of those security devices as well. They all knew about it. And one of the criminals there, who was a very big and violent man, he looked at me and said, Brahm, do you think you could even get to that pen before we jumped you? And I looked at him and said, probably not. He said, no, you wouldn't be able to. We're that fast, we can get to you almost before you think of pressing it. But he said, don't worry, Brahm, we like you. If any of these guys behind me tried it, I'd get to them first. That was my security. I was one of the safest people in that prison. Why? Because of my security system? Why? Because I had great skill in martial arts? No! The reason why I was safe, because I had lots of good karma. No one would harm me. They would only protect me. And that is my security system for life. I have no money, I have no bank account, I have nothing put away for a rainy day. But I have lots of friends. As I help other people when they need help, I am your security system. So you are my security system. I know if I get sick, there'll be a lot of people who would get very happy. They can make some good karma by taking me to hospital or giving me medicines. In fact, I've got to be very careful not to get sick. If I do get sick, I try to keep it quiet. Because if I tell people I'm sick, people come up to me and say, oh, here's some medicine, Ajahn Brahm, you must take this, it worked for me. And someone else said, oh, you have to take this herbal medicine, it's very good. And someone else said, take this medicine, it's special Chinese medicine, it will work. And before I'd know it, I got 30 or 40 different bottles of medicine, which I promised to take, and once I take them all, it makes me really sick. Because people are so kind. And it's that kindness which is the best security system you can ever have. So really, are you insecure? The only truly insecure people are those without friends. Those without real loved ones. Those without good karma. If you have good karma, it doesn't matter if you've got lots of money or no money. It doesn't matter whether you're abroad or whether you're at home, doesn't matter what happens to you, it's your good karma will always, always help you. Some of my monks, I'm very proud of, they test out their karma from time to time. Some of them have done strange things, like there's a couple of nuns who decided to go to Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, the Catholic country, and just get off the boat with no money, with no guppies or attendants, and just walk and see what happens. In the morning they'd walk for alms food in a Catholic country where no one knew what a monk or a nun was, what a Buddhist monk or a nun was. Completely insecure. They found every day they ate well. Every evening they're invited to somebody's home. They lived off their good karma. I haven't got a credit card, not a real one. I've got the good karma credit card. And I can cash it at any time. It's a gold. Unlimited. Unlimited things in there. And it's an ATM whenever I see a person. They're my ATM. I can smile at them. I can help them. And they help me back. They understand, and they walked and they had no problem at all. Another of my monks, they were returning from overseas, I think it was from New Zealand. And they deliberately said, I'm not going to tell you when I land at Perth Airport. I'm not going to give you my flight details. Just leave me alone. When I get to the airport, I'm going to start walking and see what happens. And the airport is maybe some 60, 70 kilometers from my monastery. They never got more than 100 meters outside the terminal before someone stopped and took them all the way to my monastery. Who needs a taxi when you've got good karma? And the moral of these stories. Oh, look, there's another monk, a very good friend of mine. He was Japanese born, but he was a monk with Ajahn Chah. After many years, he decided to go and see his family. So what did he do? He got a plane ticket from one of the supporters to Narita Airport in Tokyo. He had no one to meet him there, no one actually to give him a meal, no one to escort him, just one monk by himself, like in the time of the Buddha. He got out of the airport and started walking. Soon, people saw him walking, asked what he was doing. He said he was a monk. They gave him food. He gave him a place to stay. He carried walking the next day. Soon, somebody told the newspapers, he had an article in the newspapers. Within 3 or 4 days, he was on the television. A real monk who was living with insecurity in the sense that he didn't have any funds or any support, but he had the faith in his good karma. It was actually the Thai ambassador saw him on the TV. And then from that time on, the Thai embassy looked after him like you wouldn't believe. Now the point is that sometimes that we worry over much because we think, oh, what would happen if I get sick? Oh, what would happen if I lose my job? Oh, what would happen if somebody dies? Or if I go bankrupt? Look, if you've got lots of good karma, you don't have to worry about anything. Don't you have faith in the law of karma? I've seen it happen many times. This one of my friends, he was a monk with me in the early days in Thailand. And actually he came to my monastery in the early years just to help with some building. Because he was a very, very skilled at building. He actually taught me quite a lot about laying bricks and other things. But after a couple of years in Australia, he disrobed. I lost contact with him. We found contact with him early this year because he'd moved somewhere in Sydney or in Queensland, in New South Wales or Queensland, I think somewhere close to the border. We lost contact with him. But he turned up at Ajahn Chah's monastery in the northeast of Thailand to make a huge donation. We wondered what he was doing, making such a huge donation. And he said he just won the Australian lottery. And he thought the reason why was, as a monk, he spent 1 or 2 years, when Ajahn Chah, my teacher, started getting sick, putting aside his meditation and using his building skills to build a hut for his teacher, Ajahn Chah, to convalesce. He worked so hard building that. And he thought that such a great act of good karma, of helping such a wonderful monk as Ajahn Chah, must have some karmic reward. And he thought, haha, it took some time coming, but this was it. First prize in the Australian lottery. Now, what do you need to invest in the stock market for? Stock market goes up, stock market goes down, but the karma stock market always goes up. It's really secure. And you know that happens. I read this story about a year ago. There was a doctor in the US, a specialist, very well known in his field. And he said that when he was young and putting himself through university, because his parents weren't wealthy, he sometimes had to work to get money to actually to survive in the universities. And he got a job as a door-to-door salesman during the summer holidays. And one day, on a very hot day, he was knocking door-to-door, saying, I'm not quite sure what, I can't remember. But he knocked on the door and a lady answered. He said, you want to buy this? He said, no, I don't really need anything. Like most people, the door-to-door salesman is sometimes the hardest people to get any sales. But the woman looked at him and said, it's a very hot day. Have you had anything to drink or anything to eat yet? He said, actually, no, I can't really afford that. I'm working hard. He said, wait for a few moments. And this very kind lady just got a glass of milk and some biscuits for this young student, the young man. He drank the milk, ate some biscuits and said, thank you so much. Many, many years later, when he became a specialist, I think an oncologist, he had a patient who had a very, very bad cancer. he decided to give this lady extra special treatment. He worked to his very best to try and cure her, and after many months, she went into remission, mainly because of his skill. When she received a bill from the specialist, and you know how expensive doctors' bills are, she gritted her teeth before she opened the envelope. Now, it was her health. She had to pay it, no matter how much it cost. But when she opened the envelope, she saw a very strange bill. All it said was, paid with a glass of milk and some cookies. The doctor remembered her. When he saw the name and saw the address, he remembered that was the lady who, out of kindness, gave him a glass of milk and some cookies when he was a poor, hard-working student. That was her karmic reward, paid with a glass of milk and some cookies. So that's what the law of karma is. If you're kind, it's amazing just how, at the right time and the right place, people will come to help you when it's really needed. If you've been kind to others and you lose your job, you will get a phone call. You don't know from where. You don't even need to look for it. And someone will come along and say, are you free? This happened to a friend of mine in New Zealand. He was a Thai boy who we knew when we first opened our monastery in Australia. He moved to New Zealand. He was in the hospitality industry, you know, in hotels. He had this wonderful job with a free apartment, a car, and a very good salary. And it happened that one of his masters, a Thai monk, was visiting. And so he asked his boss, can I take a few days off to look after my monk? And the boss said, no, it's a busy time, I can't get replacements, you're invaluable, you have to stay. You can't take time off. And the Thai boy said, look, it's important, this is my master. It's only 3 days, I'll make it up later on. And the boss said, no, you can't. He said, okay, I resign. He just resigned his job there because looking after his master was more important than his job. When he told his girlfriend scolded him, you stupid boy. You don't get jobs like that very easily. The economy is no good. It's hard to get other work. Why are you doing this? He said, because I have to. Because I need to. It's karma. This is my master. I can't abandon him. I've got to look after him. This is more important. Things will work out. So he looked after his master, even decided, because there was a mistake on the airline bookings from New Zealand back to Thailand, he decided to escort his teacher, get a ticket on the aircraft, and just to escort him to Thailand, make sure he got to his monastery, turn around and go back to New Zealand. As soon as he got back, to his girlfriend's great surprise, he picked up the phone, rang a colleague, and within 24 hours, he had a new job, about 30% more salary, a bigger apartment, a better car. And so he told us what happened. This is what happens with the law of karma. If you're a good person, you don't need to be a Buddhist to believe in the law of karma. You know that if you're a good person, a kind person, a generous person, people will look after you. It happens that way. So dealing with the insecurities of life, if you really feel insecure, you should look at how much karma you'd be making. Good karma, that is, not bad karma. And if you've made lots of good karma, you're a kind person, you're a generous person, you help other people, you're a virtuous person, you do not need to worry at all. You have spiritual wealth, which you can call on in times of need. People will come and help you at the right time. In the old language, we call that faith. Sometimes people are just too skeptical of such faith. But I live by such faith. I don't have health insurance, even when I come to Singapore. The travel agent said, you may have a heart attack, you may get knocked over, get health insurance. And I said, all the good deeds I've done in Singapore, that's my health insurance. And they said, I'm supposed to actually to go to Jakarta next month. there is a seminar held by the Buddhists in Indonesia. It's the first Indonesian conference on Buddha Dharma. I asked, where am I staying? They said, just for convenience, because the seminar is in the Hilton Hotel, we'll put you up there. I read in the Straits Times this morning, the Australian government have put out a travel warning that the terrorists have targeted certain hotels called the Hilton. Should I go? Yes! Because I've got insurance. My good karma. That's why, as a monk in Thailand, whenever, if you go on a bus in Thailand, they always put you up the front. They know, look, he can't die, so he's going to protect all the people sitting in the back. And I remember they did that once. They put me right up the front of this bus in Thailand. And it was a time, there was in the newspapers and the radio, even on the TV, there was a series of buses exploding into flames because they were very poorly maintained. And some people had died. One of my friends who was a monk, he didn't die in one of the exploding buses, but all his few belongings he had, I think he had some shoes and his bowl. He had to leave them in there. They got burnt to smithereens, to cinders, because his buses were exploding in flames. It was a whole series of them. And I was on a bus in the northeast of Thailand. I was sitting again in the front next to another Thai monk. And suddenly there was a shout from the back, "Smoke!" And the bus driver slammed on the brakes. And he didn't go out the door, he went out the window. And even the monk sitting next to me, you know that monks are usually very polite, they let other people go first. Not this monk, he was out the door first. And all the people were trying to get out the bus as soon as they possibly could. Now, because I wasn't looking at the TV or listening to the radio, because I didn't read the newspapers then, I didn't know what was going on. So I just sat there, thinking, what's going on? What's the big problem? And everybody was going out, and one person lingered in the back and said, "It's okay, it's just a cigarette." And everyone, oh, phew. And so they started coming in, because I was sitting in the front, because they saw me just sitting there quite peacefully, said, "Oh, that's a real monk, one is not scared." It's not that I was brave, it's just I was stupid, I didn't know. But anyway, people look after you, and your good karma looks after you. That's why you're secure. Even sometimes you've gone to dangerous places, even like haunted caves. I once went to this haunted cave in the northeast of Thailand. I was told by one of the great monks of Thailand, it was Ajahn Sawat, he's dead now, but if you ask any of the Thai monks, they know Ajahn Sawat was a famous monk. I was staying in his monastery and I was walking through the mountains and I said, I had a two-day journey to the next monastery. I said, "Are there any caves on the way?" And about halfway, and after a day's walk, because I love meditating in caves, he said, "Yes, there's a cave there, but be careful, there's a bad ghost there." Now this was a monk saying this, and the monks don't lie. So when he said there was a bad ghost, I said, "Great! I always wanted to see a bad ghost." To have a contest, Ajahn Brahm versus the bad ghost. So I went to that village and I asked them, "Where's the cave?" They said, "Over there." And so I went to this cave. And do you know that cave, they had a skeleton in the cave. Somebody, I don't know why, what it was doing there, what the history was. It was a dead skeleton. Actually, all skeletons are dead. There's a skeleton laying down. So I meditated there late into the evening. Was I scared?
No.
Was I insecure? No, I had my good calm, that was my security. Ghosts can't harm monks. They're scared of monks. Sometimes I say boo to the ghost and the ghost runs away. Actually, this is one of the ghost stories. This is The ghost never came out until I laid down. I'd been meditating, waiting for the ghost, and then never came, so I was tired, I lay down, have a few hours of rest. As soon as I lay down, I heard someone running towards me, running at full speed, and then stopped right next to me. What do you think I did? I said, go away, you've come at the wrong time, I was waiting for you, shove off. And so he went away, and that was it. See, if you're firm, ghosts will do what they're told. So that way you're fearless. And isn't that insecurity about fear? What will happen if? So like insecurities, they're part of life. You know, things are uncertain, they will change. One thing we accept, change. Have you read that book, Who Moved My Cheese? I haven't, but I understand that before he wrote it. I should have written that book and made a lot of money for the Buddhist Fellowship. Because it's all about adapting to change. That's all it is. So life is always changing. So in that sense, it's insecure. The outside is insecure. But because it's insecure, that's why life is interesting. It's fascinating. It would get so boring if you could always know what I was going to say. It'd be boring if I knew what I was going to say. Even I don't know what I'm going to say. So life is really fun. That's why I say I live life on the edge. Live life on the wild side. That's my motto. But what I mean is that you adapt to every situation, every circumstance. That's how I give talks, if anyone wants to know. I don't know what I'm going to say. I look at the audience. I feel the audience. That's why I look at your eyes all the time. And I scan you. And I adapt. I change. So that's, I'm very uncertain what I say and how I say it and when I say it. I live with that insecurity of not predicting, not knowing what the future is going to be, but knowing that if you have that good mind state, if you've got good karma, whatever you do, wherever you go, whatever happens, you can always turn to your advantage. Even when I first became an abbot, I thought, this isn't what I want to do. Because if you're taking that degree of responsibility, my goodness, you're taking a risk. Even like the Buddhist Fellowship, before I came here, they showed me a possible new quarters for actually to move the Buddhist Fellowship to, with a huge rent. Wow, that's being very insecure. Can you actually pay that? What do you mean, can you? If you've got good karma, if you're doing good things, the whole universe conspires to help. It always happens. If it's a good thing you're doing, it will always work. Where are we going to get the money from? Where are we going to get the food from? What's going to happen next? If you've got good karma, you're the most secure person in this world. Look, there are some people who were millionaires or billionaires even. Stock market crashes, or someone breaks the law, and they lose all their money just in a few days. Money doesn't buy you security. You may have a big family and think, oh, my children will look after me when I grow old. But your children might join some weird sect which says, don't look after your parents, they're Buddhists. There's no one to look after me anymore. Or you may put all your money in a pension fund, and the people invest in the wrong stocks and bonds. And there's your pension fund, all gone. Where can you find security in this life? The Buddha told you that in good karma. If you have good karma, you're the most secure person. You know that what's going to happen to you is only going to be good things in this life and the next. Happiness comes. Sometimes you wonder where. Did I deserve this? Where did it come from? If you look, yes, you did deserve it. So dealing with the insecurities of life is like dealing with your lack of good karma. Make good karma. Why, you've got the chance. Who knows? Stock market might break down, you won't be able to make a donation. Who knows? You might be too sick to come and hear a talk. Who knows? Atom bomb might disappear. I might get hijacked. Who knows? So today is important. Who knows? You may not have time to say how much you love your partner, to say sorry for anything which you said or done to hurt them. Take the opportunity. Not grab the day, that's just too long. Grab the moment to do good things. Any opportunity you have to be compassionate, to be kind, to do good, take it. And if you take it now, you are investing a secure investment for your future. You're building up security, real security. I think, what does it say, I think, in the Christian Bible? Because I was brought up as a Christian, some of these things are still in the back of my mind. Do not lay up goods where, I think, the rust and the mice eat it or something. What did he mean by that? I mean, the world is very insecure. Money, people, health, that's its nature. It happens to everybody. But good karma, goodness, kindness, compassion, that is always secure. If you're a kind, compassionate person, you have heaps and heaps of friends. And you have always someone to look after you. Sometimes people are members of diners club. They can actually get cheap food in these restaurants throughout the world. I'm a member of, not diners club, monks club. I don't get cheap food, I get free food. The best food. Come to the Buddhist fellowship and see how I eat. I get a banquet every day. Even like the Sultan of Brunei probably doesn't get as much food at the breakfast as I get. Isn't that great? And what have I done for that? I don't pay it. I don't even need to wash the plates afterwards. And sometimes you go to people's house, not only do they give you the most delicious food and they wash up, they give you a donation for coming there. Now this is really secure. And I know wherever I go in the world, there's always someone who's more than happy to put me up at night. So like, I have hotels all over the world with the best room service because they're my friends, my devotees, people who are I've been kind to them and they're kind back to me. It's the best hotel in the world to stay with your loved ones. Not just your family, but your friends, your Dharma friends. Isn't that beautiful? That I've got room to stay in almost every city. Just about. Maybe Baghdad I haven't got room to stay. And if I walk down the streets, there's always someone you meet who'll give you a lift, who's kind to you. That's the security which is the best. The security which you build up by your goodness. Try it out. You will find, if you make lots of good karma, kind, sharing with others, being good to them, helping them in their time of need, it will come back to you many, many times over. The law of karma is like planting a mango. It's not just tit for tat, it's not just you invest one, you get one back. When you plant a mango, you get thousands of mangoes back. That's why just one good deed comes back to you many, many, many times over. That's security. Thank you.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. I'm going to kick off the whole Q&A session, but you're also welcome to come forward with your questions. Ajahn Brahm, if I may start off, some parents feel that they've been really kind to their children, but after the children grow up, they don't seem to see this good karma ripening. In fact, some of the children might be rather ungrateful and go off and don't even look after them. I mean, what would you say as consoling words to these parents who put so much in their lives for their children?
Okay, if you've actually been looking after your children and been caring for them, I think after a while, many of the children actually understand that, yeah, you've got to look after your parents because of how much they've given to you. But one of the best things is make sure you bring your children to Dharma class, where it's brainwashed into them to look after your kids. in his condition. Look, I didn't even go to a Dharma class when I was a kid. I was brought up in the Western tradition. But I love my family so much, even though I'm a monk. And if my mother just rang up this evening and said, look, I need you, I probably wouldn't go to the retreat in Malaysia tomorrow. So my mother needs me. It's important. You'd actually stop doing things sometimes for your parents, make sure they're okay. So I'm a Westerner, for goodness sake. And I can look after my parents. And my father's obviously dead now, so I can't look after him. But it's important to do that out of kindness, it's not kindness, it's just natural, you have to. I don't see how you can't. But I think the problem is that the children these days are being conditioned by Hollywood, by the TV, by music, and I think need to actually to have more conditioning in the spirituality. We have the spirituality that people are much more important than things, and one of the most important people is our parents. But it's not just being looked after by your children, because sometimes that maybe you only have one or two children, sometimes the children may not have the ability to look after you. Don't just look at your family as just being the people who live in your house. Look at your family as the people sitting next to you now. Your friends, your companions in the office, in your societies, in the temples, in the Buddhist temples, the churches or whatever. They're also family as well. It's like the great extended family. And if you're kind and caring to them, it may not be your children who look after you, it's other people's children look after you. And I'll tell the children who don't look after their parents, in all countries in the world there's a problem with youth taking drugs, being depressed and being suicidal, not actually following orders. Where does that come from? I think the problem with youth throughout the world, these are youth who in their last life were old people who weren't looked after, and now they're taking their own back. So look after your old people, otherwise they'll come back as delinquents. So the point being here, it's important to do that, but don't just rely upon your children. Make good karma widely, with your friends, with a wider family, with society. Serve the community, and the community will serve you. I think sometimes we just look upon children and think, it's the children's job is to look after us. It's not just the children's job, it's our job. Everyone's job.
Banks, insurance companies, investment companies, even the government tells us you may not have enough money to retire. And that creates a lot of insecurity in our people. Yeah. So they even stop wanting to make donations, maybe. Yeah. No, but seriously, what happens is that people start to feel that, you know, they won't have enough, and it worries them a lot. So what is your advice?
Okay. Obviously that you have to have enough money to have a roof over your head and just food. But one of the wonderful things about Buddhism is that we encourage people to live simply. So you don't need the big house to be happy. Look, the bigger your house, the more you have to clean, or the more you have to pay your maid. What do you want a big house for? All it is to show off, that's all. Look at me, I got a bigger house than you have. Nah, 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 nah. I've got the smallest house of all. I've just got a little room where I stay. I remember we had some visitors. They weren't Buddhists. There was a local women's club. They came just for the afternoon to see what a monastery was like. I took them to my room, my hut. And one of the women looked inside and said, oh, is this the only place you live? I said, yeah, this is where I live. So, oh, if only I had a house that size, I could get my housework done in a couple of hours. I remember going to bless this house of a rich Thai woman in Perth. It was a mansion by the river. It had so many houses. Just about houses within a mansion. So many rooms. And this is true. I asked to go to the toilet. She had to draw me a map. She She lived in that house alone. And I thought, that is a poor lady with a lot of money. What did he do things like that for? Isn't it much better to have a small house where you see each other all the time? Where everyone is so close together physically, they learn how to live close together emotionally. Sometimes that in Buddhist or spirituality, we learn to appreciate the small is beautiful. But no, we don't need a big house. We don't need a big car. You can go on the MRT. I don't always go in cars. I was on the bus on Tuesday. You can get around on a bus easily. So you can actually learn to live with it. Be a vegetarian. The food costs much less. Instead of actually, you know, having to go on tours, going sort of to Australia or go to America or go and see Egypt or whatever you want to go touring, just buy the video, buy the DVD. There's many ways you could, and as a Buddhist, actually you learn how to live simply, which means that your funds go a long, long way. I think I just saw, and it was on a bus stop, and actually just as we're coming up here, I was just looking out the window, which I like to do to see what's going on out there in the world. It was probably past a pub, and I think they had a bottle of Chivas Regal, $198. It's supposed to be a special offer. I don't know what it normally costs. $200 for a bottle of alcohol. Think how much money you're saving by keeping the five precepts. By not taking alcohol. So the reason why people need a lot of money is because they lead an extravagant lifestyle, which is not really necessary. Your happiness comes from your friends, not from your money. Your joy comes from your service to others. And not expecting happiness, not buying happiness from other people. And you find as a spiritual person, a Buddhist or a Christian or whatever, you can get so much happiness at hardly any cost. The best things in life are free. This Dhamma talk, so much happiness is no charge. So as a Buddhist or as a spiritual person, you don't need that much money to retire on. In fact, many people have retired at a young age and they know how to live simply. They don't have to work so long. They don't need to have such a big nest egg. So that way, if you learn to live simply, you have far greater security. You don't need so much. You can do with little. It makes life so much easier. So when the government says it's an insurance company, it's just business, it's just the advertisements. Don't believe those advertisements. I just tried, you know that famous, I'm not sure if I said this in my book, I was a stupid boy when I was young and growing up. I remember this advertisement on the television. I can say this now because I don't know if they still make this. It's called St. Bruno Tobacco. I was about an 18 or 19 year old boy, a student. And I saw this on the television. This ordinary looking guy was walking down the street, alone, no friends. He got out the pipe and put this tobacco, St. Bruno tobacco. He lit the pipe. And as soon as the aroma came off the pipe, he was walking past a bank. And this incredibly beauty, sexy girl walked behind the bank, smelt it, and she was completely obsessed. She jumped over the counter and followed this boy. And then she went past the newsagent. The same thing happened to this beautiful blonde who couldn't resist the smell of St. Bruno tobacco and just again went out of the shop and just followed, entranced, in love with this guy. And after about 2 minutes, they had this string of beautiful girls following this boy. St. Bruno tobacco makes you sexy. That's stupid, isn't it? It's idiotic. But guess who bought some St. Bruno tobacco? It didn't work for me. It's a good job, otherwise I might not have been a monk. But the point is that you get sucked into those advertisements. So be smart, think it out for yourself. How much do you need? You need enough just to pay your bills and keep the bills low down. You don't need a big house. The apartment doesn't need to be in the top end of town. Sometimes you get wonderful people in the poorer suburbs. They look after each other, they care for each other. Sometimes in the posh suburbs they're just too snooty. They won't talk to you if you haven't got a Merc outside. So you don't need that much. When you don't need that much, you find yourself more secure. Even if you don't have all the people around you, you'll have yourself. And if you have yourself and you love yourself, you're never, never lonely. So this is actually how you can be secure. So be careful. Have enough. Now find the middle way. I mean, don't just give away all your money and think, okay, karma, now you support me. be sensible. But you don't need that much. And don't believe the advertisements say, if you haven't seen the Amazon rainforest, you haven't lived. You don't need to see the Amazon rainforest to be happy. You don't need to have visited Disneyland to be happy. You don't need to have done all these things to be happy. You need to be peaceful inside to be happy. When you're peaceful inside, you've done good karma, you've got lots of friends and loved ones, because you're a good person. Who needs money? Just enough to pay the bills, that's all. So you don't need that much to retire.
Ajahn Brahm, when you're young, for example, the boys who've got girlfriends, you know, they're worried that the girls might go off with someone else or another boy comes along after them. And then another type of security is after you're married, and then the women start getting worried about their husbands. Especially now in Singapore, it's full of China girls all over Singapore. And some of these men go to China to work, and then they find maybe girlfriends there. So what's your advice on this insecurity of relationship that we all have to bear with as well?
Okay, yeah.
You're not going to say, how would you know, right?
Now I became a monk to get rid of all this sort of stuff. No, it's true. Look, have you ever noticed what you're really worried about is actually what happens? There's a psychology there. If you're really afraid of your girlfriend or boyfriend, husband, wife, you're really afraid of your partner going away, you become so overprotective. You become just so paranoid. You go ringing up your partner all the time. Some of you haven't got your telephone actually turned off now, they may be actually ringing on your mobile. Wife, where are you? I'm at the Buddhist lodge. Really? And then what happens in the end? Who wants to live with a person like that? Who's always checking up on you? And so their fear that you're going to run away, they actually bring it about. There's something about a partnership which is called trust. It's the same as faith. It's the same as doing good karma. If you're a good person, trust in your goodness, your care, your selflessness, and you're really sensitive to that person you live with. And if you are sensitive and caring, giving, and you give trust as well, you'll find that the probabilities that that relationship is going to last a long time increase enormously. When someone gives that trust to you, how do you feel? You just can't destroy that trust or misuse it. It's so precious. You say, look, I trust you, wife. Off you go. I trust you, husband. I'm not going to check up on you. You're really caring and giving all the time. The husband will feel rotten if they even look at a China girl. Something inside stops them. Chances are, not all the time, but 90% of the time, you'll find you have a long relationship. There's an old simile which I have given. If you keep a bird in a cage, And you always keep that cage door shut. There has to come a time when you, by mistake, by forgetfulness, you leave the cage door open. And then the bird will fly away, it will never come back. That's like these relationships where you feel the partner is keeping you in a cage. They won't let you go, they're so afraid, so insecure. Thinking, oh, if I don't actually follow my wife everywhere, she's so beautiful that she'll run away with somebody. If I don't you've got these agencies now you can hire to check up on what your husband does. If you do that, you'll find that you put your husband in a cage. Which means that when there is a chance, they'll fly away and they won't come back again. The best way to keep a bird is to leave the cage door open. But to make it such a wonderful cage, so kind, so soft, so well appointed, such wonderful food, the bird doesn't want to fly off. It's so happy in that cage. You can leave the door open. If it does fly off, it will be back in an hour. Because it likes you. Now that's the best security. You find that if you are a really good person, I'm not talking about a beautiful person on the outside, because beauty fades away, but a beautiful person on the inside. Someone your partner respects, not just because what you look like, but because what you are. How caring, how kind, how sensitive you are. Then the probability of your relationship lasting a long, long, long time is increased enormously. That's how you feel more secure. By giving freedom to the partner, by making yourself into a spiritually very, very attractive person. That's how you keep your relationships going.
Ajahn Brahm, what would you advise someone who has a partner who has been treated like a bird, with the cage door open, and he flies out, but he does all sorts of naughty things, although he flies home. And in the meantime, you've got little birds you have to feed at home. What would you say to this partner? Should just shut the door and say, okay, that's it, or still leave this door open,
okay,
but you have so much pain at home?
You know that story, which is in the book, and it actually comes from one of the people in Singapore, but I don't mind telling it. It's about this marriage counsellor who had a client who wanted a divorce because she thought her husband was actually unfaithful, playing around with other women. Because he'd come back from the office very, very late, and he wasn't at all tender or affectionate to her. And so she thought, well, I'm pretty sure all my antennae are up. I know he's having an affair with someone else. So I want to get divorced. And this marriage counselor was very, very smart. She said, look, does he love you? He said, of course not. He said, well, now's not the time to get divorced. It just makes it too easy for him. And this is what I want you to do. I want you to make him fall in love with you again. And then divorce him. Now I'll teach him a lesson. Now what are you supposed to do? I want to make sure that actually you start looking out for your appearance. Because like men like, you're supposed to like good people, but they sometimes get turned on by people who have good appearance. So now go down to the hairdressers and get a good hairdressing style. Look at your weight. Go to the gym. Now wear some better clothes, put on some makeup, some perfume when he comes home. Be kind, be nice. And keep on doing this until he falls in love with you again. And then you can hit him. Right, divorce. And so she did that. That was the plan, to get real revenge. And so week by week she did this, and the counselor said that actually it started working. He started coming home earlier, he was becoming more affectionate.